What does it mean to be American? For 9-year-old America Ferreira, it meant crying during the national anthem while dreaming of becoming the first girl to play for the Dodgers. Yet she hated her name, not because she disliked her country, but because of the constant questions about her identity. Teachers thought her name was a typo. Her American history teacher wheeled her around the classroom singing "God Bless America" while she died inside. What people didn't understand was that she wasn't named after the United States, but after her Honduran mother, born on Dia de las Americas. This tension between belonging and otherness forms the heart of American Like Me, where dozens of first and second generation Americans share their experiences navigating life in the hyphen between cultures. For children of immigrants, adaptation becomes a survival skill. Reshma Sojani, daughter of Ugandan Indian refugees, grew up in suburban Illinois searching for her name on souvenir keychains at Kmart, finding Rainbow, but never Reshma. Her parents immediately Americanized their names. Mukund became Mike and Merdula became Mina to help them find jobs, yet they named her Reshma, preserving a connection to their heritage. As the only Indian in her school, she endured constant bullying about her skin color. This shape-shifting appears throughout these stories. America Ferreira became a master at decoding expectations and transforming into whatever version pleased people most. At school, she was the perfect English-speaking student. At home, the dutiful Latina daughter. In Hollywood, she navigated the complex expectations of being a Latina actress. For Bambajan Bamba from Côte d'Ivoire, adaptation meant complete reinvention, learning English through Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, working to buy trendy sneakers, and embracing hip-hop culture to hide his African identity. Behind nearly every story stands parental sacrifice, leaving behind homeland, language, status, and comfort for the promise of something better. Michelle Kwan's parents worked multiple jobs to pay for her skating career. Her father drove an old Pinto with a 4 to 5 hour daily commute, often sleeping in the car between jobs. Her mother stayed up late sewing beads onto costumes, fingers raw and bleeding. They even sold their house to move closer to the rink, cramming their family into a 2-bedroom apartment. Congressman Joaquin Castro's grandmother, Victoria, born in Mexico around 1914 and orphaned young, immigrated to San Antonio where she faced "no dogs or Mexicans allowed" signs. Despite minimal formal education, she taught herself English and Spanish, studying by candlelight after long days of domestic work. The American dream, Castro reflects, isn't measured solely in material terms, but as a generational relay, each generation building upon the previous one's sacrifices, passing the torch of opportunity forward. The journey to self-acceptance often involves reclaiming cultural heritage once rejected. Angela Johnson Reyes grew up feeling insufficiently Latino, without a spicy Latina name ending in "es," and unable to speak Spanish fluently. She desperately wanted to embody the Chola aesthetic: dark lip liner, perfectly positioned bandana, meticulously feathered hair, and pristine white Nike Cortez shoes. Years later, she realized she was seeking something deeper: cultural pride and inherent strength. You can't be more of something you inherently are. Authenticity isn't measured in degrees, but in self-acceptance. When young Uzo Aduba felt self-conscious about her tooth gap and pleaded for braces, her Nigerian mother transformed this insecurity by revealing it as the Onyakoa gap, a distinguished family trait celebrated for generations as a mark of beauty and wisdom. "You have history in your mouth," she told her daughter, reframing physical features as connections to ancestry rather than flaws to correct. Martin Sensmeyer, who grew up in the small fishing village of Yakutat, Alaska, remembers how seeing La Bamba changed everything for him, showing a character he could identify with who wasn't portrayed as a stereotypical Indian. Until then, the only native people he'd seen in media were caricatures in Westerns that bore no resemblance to the actual native people in his community. For Jeremy Lin, the struggle for representation played out on basketball courts. At public pickup games, he struggled to gain respect or even court time. Coaches assumed he'd be a bench warmer, and opponents fought over who got to guard the easy one. Throughout high school, he faced racist comments from crowds calling him an import from China, despite being American-born. When he finally made it to the NBA, security guards mistook him for a trainer. Now he tells kids, it doesn't matter if no one else looks like you, you still belong as long as you believe you do. Cultural traditions often serve as bridges between worlds, providing continuity amid change. Lin-Manuel Miranda describes how Three Kings Day created a special bond among the five Latino kids in his predominantly Jewish/Christian elementary school. While classmates compared Christmas and Hanukkah gifts in January, the Latino children knew their holiday wasn't over. They'd gather hay for the Three Kings camels, placing shoeboxes of dead grass by their beds. On January 6th, they'd wake to presents and scattered grass, evidence of magical camels. For one day, we five Latino kids are the chosen ones, bonded by this special tradition. Tanaya Winder connects to her Pyramid Lake Paiute heritage through her grandmother's songs about falling leaves dancing in the wind. Her grandma, a boarding school survivor, never stopped singing, even when the government tried to erase their culture by forbidding native languages. Each time I sing or write, I'm lighting my fire to show my ancestors I'm okay, carrying on our traditions in a world that once tried to silence them. Many contributors describe a journey of returning, physically or emotionally, to reconnect with their roots. America Ferreira shares standing at her estranged father's grave in Honduras 20 years after last seeing him. Though she didn't go seeking this connection, finding herself surrounded by tombstones bearing the Ferreira name forced her to confront the part of her identity she had long denied. Honduras was my phantom limb, always felt but never seen or touched. Randall Park used his contribution as an excuse to interview his Korean immigrant parents. To his surprise, the floodgates opened. He learned about their childhoods in Taegu, his father's unexpected wanderlust studying in San Francisco and Paris, and their practical, arranged meeting. His mother confessed her disappointment arriving in America to find poverty instead of Hollywood glamour and explained why they didn't emphasize Korean culture. She was struggling with depression, language barriers, and raising children alone while his father worked constantly. What emerges from these stories is not just struggle, but strength. These hyphenated Americans develop a cultural fluency that allows them to move between worlds, translating not just languages, but entire worldviews. Their experiences reveal how American identity is continuously reshaped by each new generation, who find ways to honor their origins while creating something entirely new. A vision of America not as a melting pot where differences disappear, but as what Liza Koshy calls a salad bowl. Distinct ingredients tossed together to create something richer, more inclusive, and infinitely more interesting than any single definition of what it means to be American.